Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to the Castorbis podcast with a K, available on castorbis.com, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo. My name is Christian Corley, and I'm the editor of Castorbis.com. With me this week are James McLean.
Oh, hello.
Yes. Brian Tonover.
And that's me. Hello.
Yep. And our guest this week is Colm Regan. Hello.
Hello there.
Hello. As you can see, Colm's joining us from a Greek pantheon of gods. And we're going to talk about some Doctor Who stuff. I'm going to talk about why Colm's here later on. Before we get started, there's a couple of things I want to just mention. First of all, did anyone watch the Python show last night, or has anyone been to the Pythons or know what's
the whole thing with
Monty Python? They've done two sets of five shows, and last night was the last one. James, were you going to interject there?
I was going to say that the channel's very happy with the ratings, and no, I didn't watch it.
Right, okay. Well, I don't know how happy they are with the ratings. They're probably quite happy, although
they are happy.
They might have had a few complaints in the first half because a lot of it got beeps because of swearing before the water show.
Oh my God!
But the most interesting thing for Doctor Who fans is that they arrived on stage in a police box.
Is that really interesting these days, though? I mean, it's a police box in Doctor Who all the time. Yeah, they are just sodding well everywhere, aren't they?
Alright, forget I said that. The other thing is, if you've ordered a print copy of Castorbis magazine, there's a bit of a delay, which we'll be talking about on the website this week. So check there for details. It's a good delay, though. It's not a bad delay. It's potentially a very good delay. So I'm very excited about this delay. So that's that.
What are you talking about?
Well, there's a reformatting issue, isn't there? And there's a potential with a different print system, which means a lower cost for the magazine.
Well, that's good. I mean, you've got to say these things because in the end,
no,
we're not a season finale. You know, we've not got a cliffhanger here. People aren't going to be waited with bated breath until they see the magazine. They've got to tell
spoilers,
them,
isn't it? Doctor Who news. We've got Cybermen in St. Paul's over the weekend. We happily received some photos from a chap called Jonathan Lyle, who had been in London at the weekend to St. Paul's, and he snapped some Cybermen for us, basically.
Yeah.
So which St. Paul's were they
at? St. Paul's in London.
Okay.
Around St. Paul's Cathedral. And this was in a kind of recreation of the invasion, Cybermen coming out of the sewers, all that kind of business, in the 1968 serial. BBC's official Doctor Who Twitter site posted a picture of a Cyberman in a Revenge of the Cyberman pose with his hands on his hips.
Yeah. We gonna get cooking?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, apparently there's cooking happening.
Okay. And that doesn't usually happen, dear listener. And we have one of those here sometimes. Two sometimes. And we... everyone's excited about the Cybermen, aren't we?
Absolutely.
Yes. We are.
Now I know how everyone gets thrown when Bruce and Erin Rose are in the back.
Yeah, you see? Now you see what you put us through.
Yes.
We love it, though.
Someone twice. Okay. So, Cybermen, Brian, hands on hips pose.
Hands on hips pose.
Yeah. You don't have to do that now. I'm just talking about the picture that BC tweeted. What do you think?
Oh, I don't have to do it now. We're not doing the photos now. Okay.
It's up to you, mate.
Right. Hands on hips pose. You know, I actually, some of the photos that I actually enjoyed more were the ones where the Cybermen were just kind of relaxing on set. You know, they're just kind of leaning against posts and looking like they were just kind of hanging around, you know, chilling out, as some might say.
Yeah.
I found that very interesting and silly. Obviously, it won't be in the episode, but I really enjoyed them. But hands on hips pose. Yeah, it's a pose.
It is a pose.
It is a pose.
There's actually a couple of them in the in our article from the photos that Jonathan Lyle has snapped. There's one of a Cyberman with his, not only is his hands on his hips, so he's got one hand on a hip. He's also leaning against a post with a leg bent.
That's one of the ones, yeah.
As if he's touting for business, I suppose you'd say. James, can I bring you in there?
Yeah, you can if you like.
It is kind of difficult when you're on set like that and you're all dressed up and you're not actually on camera yet, you know, and so there, if there are people hanging around, they do. I mean, do you remain in character before the call action, or can you relax when you're dressed up like that?
Yeah,
everybody needs to have downtime. That's for sure.
I'm just bringing this up because I did some time as a weevil.
Yes.
For Torchwood.
As you do.
And, right. And in between, we had to. There were two of us that really had to go to the loo, and the only place we could find, we ran into a nearby hotel to use the toilet, where I knew where it was. But we had to go in the lift, and when the doors opened, there were a couple of Japanese tourists in the lift, and we just got in next to them and went up to the next floor, and they didn't say anything, but I wonder what they were thinking when two weevils got in, and then went into the toilet.
And I suppose it's not easy to remove those face masks that you're wearing when you're doing a weevil as well. Like, so the Cybermen seem like they're all locked in those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's hot in there as well. So, but yeah, you can't take off you can't just take it off between takes. No.
So, you see, if I were on set, I think I would be going to the bathroom a whole heck of a lot more just for the fun of it. Just to do that to people. I think that would be my fun in between takes.
Do you feel that would it frustrate you if you were, say, in this sort of picture as a Cyberman, and let's assume he isn't posing, he is just actually trying to sort of feel relaxed in that horrible getup? Would it frustrate
you? Pull a Dalek.
Or pull a Dalek, yes, as you do. That's always an interesting image, isn't it? I'm sure we'll see that streamed one day. Would it bother you to have these sort of pictures like this of you between takes, put onto Twitter and the like? Do you feel it sort of is a little invasive for you as a performer?
No, it would. I mean, my face wouldn't be there, would it? So
no, it wouldn't.
And it would be amusing. You know, it would be better if I was chatting to a stormtrooper or something. You know? But I don't think, as long as there's no identification of who the performer is, I don't think it really matters.
Because, I mean, I imagine there'll be a few people unfairly sort of going, oh, as you were countering what you were just saying, oh, my God, you know, he looks terrible like that. He's ruining the illusion standing like that. You know, you get that sort of silly rebuke of people who are probably bored or crying in bed later because they wish they had a better life. I don't know what they do, but they have... But they do have this sort of hostility to pictures like this. And I just kind of think, you know, I just sometimes feel sorry for this cyber guy who's probably seeing these pictures thinking, oh, God, I was just taking a little bit of a break, you know. Yeah.
Well, unless the producers set up a holding pen for them, you know, which can't be accessed by the general public, then that's going to happen, isn't it? Especially because they're doing so many street scenes. They're going to be recording in Cardiff over the next couple of weeks as well, I think. And they have been out and about recently. So it's going to happen.
Well, now, you know, if Stephen Moffat's listening, you might have screwed him. Oh, a holding pen, you say? I like that. That's good.
Well, you know, I mean, there is some merit in that because a lot of the Star Trek actors, the original actors, used to be very upset when their blooper reels got out. And people would enjoy them at conventions and so on, because to them it was their job. It was, you know, it was like their mentality was, how would you like it if someone came to your work, set a camera at your desk, and recorded every screw up that you did throughout the day? Now, nowadays, a lot of people love blooper videos, and a lot of the actors enjoy them at rap parties and so on. But I would imagine that some actors on set might not like being photographed. However, you know, in my mind, it's kind of a little bit par for the course, and especially since a lot of these photos show both Jenna and Peter taking time out to go to the barriers and pose for photos and sign autographs. I guess that they don't really kind of have an issue with it these days, or at least maybe that mindset has disappeared a lot for many actors.
Well, we all know that Brian likes his photo taken.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Jenna, there's been some... Well, and this is completely speculation, dear listener. We're not spoiling anything here because we don't know. But there's been speculation that perhaps she's leaving. There's an apparent Good Lines scene was filmed in public. Would they do that in the middle of Cardiff or London, though? That's the question. I'm not sure entirely where they were for this. Oh, it was Cardiff. It was the City Centre shoot last week. With the doctor saying goodbye to Cardiff, to Clara, perhaps, and hopefully to Cardiff. I mean, is it a bit early for changing companion, or do you think it's just has her story really been told already? Are we just extending her as purely as a continuation point for the younger viewers, as a continuing reference point by keeping her in?
Well, it could be obviously misinterpretation of what was seen on set, but indeed, it could also be her and her boyfriend's interest in L.A. calling as well. It might not be that her story is necessarily over, but it might be that the actress is ready to move on.
James, how are you feeling about Clara at the moment?
I really like Clara at the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've just taken your sentence and added a couple of words and informed an answer, I guess. It's pretty cool, that, isn't it? No, I really like... I think, as I said before, when she first came in as Oswin, I thought she was too much of the trademark Stephen Moffat smart line.
So, dear listener, you've probably noticed that we have an extra voice on the podcast this week. The booming Irish accent you can hear is Colm Regan. Colm, you
yes, sir.
Are here for a reason, aren't you?
I like to think so, yeah.
On the podcast.
I didn't just gate crash it, I think.
Yes, yes. Well, obviously, we invited you on. Why did we invite you on, though?
Well, at the moment, I've got a project which has kind of come to fruition, which is a novel, and of in the course of kind of trying to put myself about a bit, I put up some posts about me having done double work for David Tennant in some Doctor Who episodes. Which has tickled some folk, yourselves included, and so that's why I'm here.
Excellent. So, just to recap on that, ladies and gentlemen, Colm has doubled for David Tennant, which means kind of we've had three doctors on the podcast now, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or four if we include Tom Baker's BT dial up and make him say things thing.
I really think we need more of Tom Baker's added. To the end of every podcast, by the way, that one we did.
What was Tom Baker's thing?
Well, basically, you could dial this number. You know when you send text messages to landlines?
Yes.
And then someone reads it out, or it's like an automated readout. Well, Tom provided his voice for that a few years back. So we basically sent some text messages and made him say things, and then we included the podcast.
One of them was sort of a self-promotion for our website, which I just think should be tacked on to the end of every podcast.
We haven't used that in a long time. I think I might include it at some point.
Please. Yes. Well, we talked about it now, so it must be here now.
It must be here about now.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
ChrisTerberos.com has to be my favorite website in the cosmos. Would you like a jelly bunny?
Oh, it's good, isn't it?
Back to Colm, our resident doctor on the podcast right now.
Yeah, I'm following, because we've had John Guiler on, who's obviously the first Doctor's voice in The Day of the Doctor.
Right.
And we've had Colm Baker as well, who kind of tops the tree, because he was an actual living Doctor on the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, that trumps any card I've got in my pack anyway.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But, hey, he didn't join us for a full show. He was on location.
Yes. That doesn't impress me. Yeah, he wasn't here. He wasn't here. So are you a Doctor Who fan? I mean, you know, just because you've been in it doesn't necessarily mean that you are.
I am now more of a fan than I was. I didn't really. When I was growing up in Ireland, I didn't have BBC, and so it didn't really cross my radar. Other than my very cool uncle was. So I knew about it. And then when I moved away from Ireland, I moved to the Canaries, and I didn't have a TV and stuff over there. And it was only when I got back to the UK and they were kind of relaunching it with David Tennant at the helm, that I started to get interested in it, mostly because he's just such a charismatic actor. That when I saw an episode, I wanted to see the next episode, and I wanted to see the next episode. And that was the first time I'd actually watched Doctor Who, for a full episode. Before that, I'd just seen clips and stuff that my uncle had shown me. I got into it then once Tennant took the helm. Yeah.
How did you actually get into it, like on screen into it?
Well, I was. Being a musician, there's a lot of time when you're not working. So I took on a, there's an agency called Phoenix, which is a casting agency that do extras for lots of stuff that is filmed around here. So I took a job with them, and I was on the extra list for a couple of things. And that's how I got the Weevil job. I'd done some other stuff for another program called Casualty, where I was a patient lying in a bed, which was a nice, easy job. But and then one day I got a call from one evening. I got a call from Phoenix saying, can you come in tomorrow and do a job? Now, this isn't unusual for a casting agency to try and be getting people the day before. But as it happens, I had a lot of stuff on, and I was working in the studio at the time on my first solo album. And I said, no, I can't, sorry. And then they rang back like 20 minutes later and said, we could really do with you tomorrow. So I said, okay, then. So I went in, and I didn't really know what it was for. And when you work as an extra, you're used to waiting around for hours and then being shown onto a cold bus. Where you wait around for another couple of hours and you're kind of not ignored, but you're definitely way down the pecking order in terms of the production team's importance list. But this time when I walked in, the assistant director came and said, Cullen, we're so happy to have you here. Here's your trailer. And directed me into a trailer where I walked in and... I saw the blue suit hanging up, and then somebody popped their head through and said, here's the scene we're shooting today, and put a script in my hand. And I kind of stood there for a second. I didn't really know. They closed the door and I was in the trailer by myself, and I was kind of thinking, okay, check these things. Have you woken up? Do you remember waking up? Yes. Okay. That's the first thing. And I really wasn't sure why I was there or why this was happening. And then in came the AD again and said, okay, now we need to get you in to get your hair cut first before we get you into costume. And I said, okay, do you mind telling me what's going on? And she said, oh, nobody's explained it to you. And I said, no. And she said, okay, well, David's mother's taken ill and he's had to go up to Scotland. We're in the middle of shooting a big scene. You're a good physical match for David Tennant, so... we want you to be in on this scene. So I said, okay, but why have I got a script? I mean, I'm not going to be learning lines or anything, am I? And she said, well, we do want you to learn the lines in the scene so that you can repeat them so that the actors can respond to it, because we will be filming from angles where they'll be seen, but you won't, or just the back of you will. So we need their response to your lines. Obviously your lines won't be in the actual cut, that'll be David doing that. So I thought, okay, that's fine, I don't have to act. I'm not, you know, it's not as scary as I first thought, because I was really quite tripped out at the start. I didn't know what was going on. So then they showed me into the makeup trailer, where they proceeded to cut my hair, and then this little Australian lady in a French maid's outfit came up and introduced herself as Kylie. And I said hello, and then a couple of seconds later, it kind of hit me. who she was. And because this is, I didn't know anything about this. This was being filmed in the summer, and it was going to be the Christmas episode, The Voyage of the Damned. So, that was, it was all a bit odd. It all happened very quickly. As it happens, David's mother didn't get better. And so he spent more time up in Scotland. So they kept me in for a couple of days shooting a couple of scenes. The first scene I shot was where the, weren't they robotic angels or some kind of, in that Voyage of the Damned. And it was on a bridge that had been blown off or something, and I had to stop Kylie from falling into it. And then there was a kind of lots of laser shots and stuff like that that we had to imagine. So it was a really cool experience, very cool indeed. And the people on set were all very nice. I wasn't, having worked as an extra before, I wasn't used to actually being spoken to by any of the assistant directors or anything. So it was all very cool. And then I think Graham, the director, realized, hang on, we can use this guy to do, so we can run up a second shooting team, basically, and get things done quicker. If we can have David shooting one scene, and then we can have Cullum doing other stuff where, you know, he can be seen from afar, and we don't have to go close up, or it can just be a passing shot or whatever. So they got me in more after that, once they realized that that they could use me. That's how it happened.
Nice. Now, I knew that you had done more than the double episode with David Tennant, the Metacrisis 10 from the end of series 4. But I wasn't aware how far back it went, so it's great to hear the beginnings of it. It's a sad reason that you had to come in to do it, but it must have been quite a surreal and unique experience to actually be stepping into the lead's shoes on set that day.
Well, it was, and we were, before they, the first thing we had to do was run through a door, and the cameras were trained on the other side of the door. So myself and the rest of the cast were on one side, and they said to me, are you nervous? You must be really nervous. And I said, no, I don't have to act. I don't, you know, I've been shown where I have to run to and what actions I have to do. So that bit's all pretty easy. You guys have got the hard part. So that was the kind of attitude I took to it. I didn't, I was like, okay, I'm being told what to do. I'm sure I can follow the instructions. If I'm not sure on anything, I'll ask. And like I said, everyone is really nice to me and made me feel very comfortable. So it wasn't within, once we got on set, the reality of it became apparent that it wasn't as daunting as it was when I was in the trailer faced with the suit, you know.
So why did they choose you? Was it to do with, was it based on your build?
Yes, on my build, my hair color, and I'm a little bit shorter than him, but they put little bills in the heels of my Converse. So yeah, it was just to do a build. Okay. That was it. I was just a good match.
This is a bit of a silly question, a bit of a silly one, but when they told you to cut your hair, what was your first thought there? Like, was your hair already similar to his? Or
No, my hair was quite long at the time. So once it was explained to me what it was for, I had no problem with it. Everyone needs a haircut every now and then. Right. even musicians.
Right.
So that didn't bother me. It has taken quite a while to grow back, though.
So you started as a weevil, and you graduated to the doctor rather quickly.
Yeah.
After they used you for a David Tennant double, did you ever do anything else, or was that it? You were David Tennant's double from then on.
That was it. That was it. They got me in for a couple of things. From there, they got me in for a bunch of different episodes. The thing is, though, that they didn't use me all the time because David Tennant is the kind of actor who likes doing everything himself. For instance, on The Voyage of the Damned, Kylie had a double as well, but her job was to just be on the mark while they're setting up the shot. So they get the lighting right and they get the angles right. And so Coyley didn't have to stand there, whereas Tennant kind of preferred standing there himself. And because they got me in to do that a few times. And while I was standing there, while they were getting the shot, he was kind of circling around and popping in and say, well, call him on this line. I'd move forward. So you want to do that mark as well. So I'd move forward. And then he'd circle around again and come back in and say, listen, and by the end of the scene, I'll probably be in this position. And I kind of said, well, do you just want to do it yourself? I said, okay. So he ended up doing as much as he possibly could himself. He didn't, he's the kind of actor who doesn't sit in his trailer and wait to be called. He's on set and he's very invested in everything that's going on. So they took me, for instance, there is a cement factory that they took me to. I think it was for the Planet of the Ood episode with Catherine Tate. And so I was on set there for a couple of days. They didn't end up using me for anything. There are other ones. Stuff filmed in Cardiff Bay, where I was running from jeeps and jumping over away from explosions and stuff like that. And they filmed it, but I didn't actually see that cut in the eventual episode. So there are bits and pieces of me scattered throughout the stuff, but I wasn't used for the amount of time I was there on set. I wasn't used that much. The thing I was used the most on was obviously Journey's End, where there were the two doctors. I did a little bit of work in Sarah Jane as him as well. And I did one thing which I dressed as a Roman soldier for the newer run, which was a scene where all the doctor's antagonists are all in one place. I think it was the Pandora opens. Yep. Yeah, that's right. So I was a Roman soldier in that. They got me in for that. There are a lot of extras on that particular scene. That was the only other one I was in which didn't involve the suit.
I know I told you this on Twitter, but this is my dream job you're talking about right here.
Right.
I would have loved to have been hanging out on set doing all of that stuff. You know, it sounds so much like so much fun.
Well,
Without a doubt, the Journey's End was the most fun because it had all the cast there, the guys from Torchwood, and it had Billy Piper and David Tennant as well, and Catherine Tate as well.
How did that make you feel? Because in a sense, when you're in that sort of role, you're not really an extra anymore, but you're not full cast. When you've got something like Journey's End, as you say, in the scenes you're in, there's a whole load of cast who all know each other, and they, you know, some, you know, haven't worked with each other for a while or not at all. And how do you feel? Because you're sort of like in a bit of a limbo there, are you?
You are, yeah. You just kind of keep yourself to yourself, really. You do what you're asked to do. You're always there when they need you to be there, you know. And you just do your job as well as you can. Of course, when there's conversation flying around, you know, you can't kind of help but throw in the odd comment here and there. And the, you know, some of them were very kind of made me feel very inclusive. But it's obviously quite a kind of high end clique you're kind of stepping in on there. So you don't want to make yourself seem like a prat, basically. No, so like I said, you just kind of keep yourself to yourself and do the best job you can and be as professional as you can. That's the way I approached it anyway.
So you started out, you're a musician.
Yeah.
You in your free time you start doing some acting. You get a dream gig. According to me,
I wouldn't call it acting.
you go into the acting in the film world. How's that?
Yeah. No, I've met enough extras who are convinced that they're you know, kind of high-end actors.
I was just gonna say, what made the move, what made you interested in writing a novel?
I've always I've always been very interested in writing. And as a young teenager, I wrote a lot. I wrote a lot of poetry, which a lot of teenagers do. I've never been very good at sleeping at night. So it was a way to fill the hours. When I was a teenager, I did do a bit of acting when I was a teenager in theatres in Cork. And I've always wanted to I've always wanted to write something with a bit of girth. But I kind of always considered it to be something I'd have to do when I got a bit older, when I got a bit of experience. So it's just come a bit sooner than I thought, basically. As well, what happened was, at the birth of two daughters, one is 6 and one is 4. So when my kids came along, I couldn't do the amount of music and the amount of places that I was used to doing before. You know, you can't just go out and tour, and you can't say, okay, I'm going to pop over to the States, for instance, for, you know, a bunch of weeks to do gigs. So I needed something that would keep me occupied and close to home at the same time. So I did a degree course in creative writing, and that kind of sparked, rekindled my writing interest.
And I suppose, I mean, I'm sure the style is obviously very different, but you know, you've written music, you've written lyrics, so it seems like just a natural progression that you're, well, musicians are essentially storytellers, you know, many of them are anyway.
Yeah, that's the kind of, I've always thought of good musicians as good storytellers, and I've got I really, really like kind of old folk tunes and songs with a very good narrative. And so a good story is definitely something that you want in, you know, in anything that's going to capture you and let your imagination be the runway for your imagination, if you like, you know what I mean? So this novel started out as a short story, and I just had a nagging sensation that there was a lot more to it. So I just started writing, and then 2 years later, I've got the book.
What's the book about?
It's about an author who is not particularly successful, but writes about a character who's a detective. The detective is very good and solves all his cases except for one, and that's the case of the fly guy. Now, the more the author writes, the less control he has over the character of the detective, and the more autonomous the detective becomes. And it gets, things just get creepy.
Okay, and what's it called?
The Fly Guy.
That's the name of the book?
Yeah.
The Fly Guy.
That's it, yeah. So that's the kind of most succinct way I can put and it's taken me ages just to boil it down to those few words, to be honest.
And so what, I mean, what's the schedule with the book? Is it out now? Is it out imminently?
The way we're looking at it at the moment with the publishing company is that it should be out in the winter. Now, okay. The winter is in the UK, that's a long time.
Yeah, it starts next week.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think, you know, December, or at the very latest, it'll be very early next year.
Okay, and who's publishing it?
A publishing house called Wordfire.
Okay.
Who are based in the States.
And we'll be able to find the book on Amazon when it's released?
Yes, you'll be able to order physical copies from Amazon or download it to your Kindle.
Excellent. Okay. Well, that sounds really, really good. Thank you for coming on the show and sharing your experiences as being as being kind of the doctor's shoulder.
Our hand.
Back of his head, yeah.
But yeah, every now and then, yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, you're welcome. Thanks very much for asking me on.
No, not at all. We'll carry on with the news. And again, Colm, feel free to interject. Let us know what you think. about it. I don't know if you play. I know I mean, regular listeners will know that James is an avid Doctor Who Legacy player, or has been. And we've heard just this morning that Doctor Who Legacy is it's now on Facebook. You can play it on Facebook, so you don't have to have an Android phone or a Kindle Fire or an iOS device. And Android, just in case I didn't mention that earlier. You can play it on Facebook. And they're also, and this is possibly the most intriguing bit, they're crossing over with the new run of Doctor Who comics from Titan, which will have codes inside for you to add the new companions from the Titan comics into Doctor Who Legacy with exclusive levels as well. Which is, we've never seen anything like this in Doctor Who. It's a kind of thing, it's not a million miles away from things like those little figures that you get with some video games, and you can import the figures into the video games. It's not a million miles away from that. But we've reviewed both the Doctor Who new comic strips, and Phil's been quite encouraged by them, although they're not 100% perfect. And Phil's Phil Bates, our assistant editor, is a big comic book writer. What do you think about this, James, of importing comic book characters into it? I mean, do you stop at Titans? Do you go all the way back to the two companions from the 1960s, if you're going to do that?
Well, I mean, they've said they've, I remember reading a comment saying that they just wanted to carry on, don't they, until they sort of get till,
well, they want to go all the way back to the beginning.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's an incredible situation, less to perhaps to do with Doctor Who, although, as you say, in this context, it's quite interesting what they're doing, but more, again, as we were saying to Brian the other week, the entire social media aspect of the way that games, you know, once you'd buy a video game, you'd have it as it is. I mean, if you go back to, say, 1985, 1984, which I'm sure most of us can, I think we all can, you go at a time where you'd buy a game, 20% of the time, it probably wouldn't load, or, you know, you couldn't get past level 2 because it would crash. And what you had was what you had. But now the games constantly evolve, and that is something so new. And it's, you know, new within the last few years, as obviously the handhelds have become big, and they're so net integrated. Everything is updated and can be adjusted and can be worked from feedback. New ideas can be deployed, which you couldn't have foreseen originally when you first put it into production. So the whole thing is such a different beast. You're getting these very, very intrinsic, clever bits of creativity, marketing, and responding to what's going on around. As you say, you've got these graphic novel comic things coming out, and you can sort of jump onto that. I don't want to say bandwagon, but you can just jump onto that and merge, you know, do stuff. And that's pretty damn cool. You couldn't do that in anything before. So it's not really just cool because it's Doctor Who. It's just pretty cool as a whole way of the way the video game industry is going. Or is that just me?
No, I think it is really cool. I think there's, I would like to see these things incorporated into other areas of gaming, and no doubt they will be over time. On a kind of a side note, I've been replaying an old video game from the 90s, Kickoff 2, which is a soccer game, which has been cleverly recreated and made available online. And in a similar kind of a way, crowd suggestions from the fans have been incorporated into the new code. Mm-hmm. So, but that's a very static way of doing it, because, you know, it's only available from this one source. Everyone has to download it or re-download it. And what you're saying is basically that when changes are made, they're pushed from the server to your phone and updated. In many cases, if you've got the settings correct, you don't even need to update it yourself. It'll happen automatically.
And these are like major updates. You know, these aren't like slight revisions. You're talking about entire aspects of games are being altered. And obviously the consoles sort of have been doing it to a certain degree as well with their downloadable contents and the like. But I think it's a little more organic. And with these smaller companies being a little more artisan than the big players, there's something a little more community about it. I mean, if you, as I've said the last few weeks, I've been sort of toing and froing with the Tiny Rebel team over some issues. And it's a sort of quite tight knit and friendly. It doesn't feel like you're having to sort of battle a corporation, or, you know, no, not battling a corporation, but battling, you know, something so mainstream. So yeah, it's brilliant. It's good. And if you've not tried it, it is very good. I did actually get a contact back on the Legacy front.
Oh, good.
Which I might as well put in here since we're talking about it. Yeah. Just to let people know, I said a few weeks ago that they pushed forward with their 2.2 update, I think it was, which was a major revision. On the Amazon Fire, there was a few issues with, there was a few bugs, and some of us reinstalled, but the actual save games, which were all cloud-based, didn't seem to carry through. So we were knocked back months. And it's been a while. I've been chatting, and to be honest, I don't think there's much they can do. They seem to believe it's an issue which is affecting Amazon Kindle more than anything else. I did actually mention, Christian, that you'd had a similar issue on the Android platform, but they seem to think it's Amazon Kindle, and they've offered actually to sort of send me the characters that I lost, and but they can't do anything about, you know, the amount of levels lost and everything. So, you know, again, it's customer service. There's only so much these, you know, you can practically do. And sometimes you just got to hand up.
Well, you wouldn't get that customer service from many other companies. I mean,
exactly.
You have a problem with Google, you have to go to a forum, and you'll never ever hear from anyone from Google.
Totally. Yes, that is exactly the point. And you, if you're going into these things thinking, well, you know, they're going to sort it and make it all totally better, and you think, well, you can't always do that. And you can't, especially with a digital situation like this, it's not so malleable that you can just say, oh, right, we'll just... we'll just create a version or send you files. It will bring you up to date to how you were. Just to, you know, it doesn't work like that. Sometimes all they can say is there's not much we can do. It's something we're going to try and resolve. You know, we're aware of it. Thank you for the thing. But we will try and do this for you. And you think, well, why not? You know, it's a free, unless you buy stuff from it, you know, technically it's a free download. You know, I think they do pretty damn good. I think it's a good service. So, yeah. So to end the ongoing chats we've done over the 4 weeks, it's like, yeah, I think they've done a good job. They've done the best they can. They've been very responsive. They've been very friendly. And it's the way the video game should go. And it is going. And it's causing massive trouble for the big names. Because, you know, I downloaded the Star Wars game the other day for free, which is quite good, similar to Legacy in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that again is a free download, so why I'm not paying 40 quid for a PlayStation 3 game or a PlayStation 4 game. So you can see the knock-on effect this is going to have on the industry is going to be fascinating.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a very interesting concept to me, because I mean, what I remember, not being a gamer as you guys know, but what I remember from all my friends is, you know, they would conquer a game and then they'd have to wait a couple years in massive anticipation for the sequel game to it. But from what you're saying, this game just seems like you're just going to endlessly be playing it. But in a way, and I know you said they're like massive updates, but in a way, is that stifling the game at all a little bit? In the fact that, you know, with the advance of technologies, the games can always progress and get better. But is this one doing that with the updates, or is it just kind of expanding new levels, new ideas?
I don't think they can do massive changes, not only because, you know, you've got a set structure of your coding, and also the fact that you really would have to, the beta you'd have to work on that, I think, would be quite extensive, and then the costs of running a development like that is big. I don't think you're going to get sort of like a massive change. People expecting Legacy to one day be, you know, like a 3D thing where you're running down the street and then encountering monsters. I don't think it's ever going to go like that, but the fact that they can organically adjust the basic design concept and improve in areas, and also the fact, because, you know, with time stuff gets boring, doesn't it? That's how we're designed. You know, we have a filter which gets us used to things, so as we've said before, so you can commit surgery on people or, you know, work in a sewer. You know, to a certain degree you have to be able to adjust to stuff. So with video games, you will, no matter how good it is, eventually get bored. So if you can keep feeding in slightly different changes to the basic design concept, you can keep it going longer, which is good for the company, and it's obviously good for the player if that's what they want. So yeah, I think the pros outweigh the cons, but I know what you mean.
Okay, let's just move then to this week's recommendations. We will start with our guest, Colm. Colm, do you have anything that you would like to recommend that our listener reads or listens to or watches or experiences? Yes,
absolutely. Well, you'll have to wait till winter to read it. But no, I'm busy on the plugging of the Fly Guy at the moment. So that's what I'm going to say. So watch out for that. And there's updates on... my Facebook page, Colm Sanson Regan, And if you enter that into any search, you'll find details about it too.
Excellent. We'll put a link in the show notes to your Facebook page. Do you have a website as well?
Yeah. What's my website? I see I've got a couple because of the music as well. Sanson Regan Books. That's my website.
Okay.
And I'm not actually sure if that's live yet. I don't think it's live right now because there's some rather cool things going to be happening with that. Some interactive elements, which will be on the site, but that will be live soon.
Okay, that sounds very interesting. Mm. Excellent. Okay, thanks for that. James, do you want to recommend anything?
No, I must admit, I'm having a bit of a Brian week. I was actually going to try and watch The Five Doctors before we started this. I don't know why, but I didn't. So no, I recommend that you are a little more forthright and proactive with your recommendations, Brian.
Nice.
That's my recommendation to you. Than I am.
Right.
Yeah.
Come on, Brian. So you've got to do good now because I've recommended.
I've got to do good. I know. This is tough because I've still been doing the whole Stargate thing and I'm going to go ahead and plug our guest a little bit further because I've been checking out Colm's album Hotel.
Oh, and good.
I suggest people check that out. I'm actually kind of hooked on 13 Days. That's a great song, Colm.
Thank
by
you
the
very
way.
Much. That's
you're welcome.
It's one of my personal favorites, that one, yeah.
Is it? Nice. Yeah, it's a great track. So yeah, I would recommend that for sure.
Okay.
Great. Thank you, mate.
You're
excellent.
Welcome.
Well, I'm going to check that out myself at some point as well, dear listener. So just so you know, we're not just going to put it on there. We're going to check it out first, obviously. And whose turn is it now? Brian, your turn for recommendation.
That was me.
That was his recommendation.
That was it, was it?
Yes, okay. It wasn't just James throwing his voice again.
I tell you something else I'm going to recommend, because okay. I'm pretty surprised about this. I recommend people stop watching the bloody bootlegs of these new series coming up.
Doing this?
Yeah, oh. And I'm pretty surprised. People I know and some that I respect, as their family I know have done it. It's like, oh my God. I'm just shocked, you know, not because of the legality things. I know people don't, you know, that's not the issue, but just surely I'm just surprised that so many fans seem to be quite comfortable with it. So, yeah, I've even seen them say, I've downloaded it. It's pretty cool. I think you're going to like it. And you think, why are you telling people this? Surely you should be a little embarrassed that you've gone and sneaked ahead, because it's like sort of rude, isn't it? Is it just me? Is that bad manners?
It's kind of like what I said from the beginning when word was out that the scripts alone were out there. You know, a lot of people work very hard on this sort of thing for you to just watch it. And I mean, and doing exactly what you said these people did. They watched it, and they not only watched it, they went ahead and they told people that they watched it, which means they're probably talking about aspects of it, which puts those secrets and those things out there too soon. So, yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I mean, it's what? At this point, it's a month away. You know, we can hold out that long. You know, we've done longer.
It's not really showing the, because you'd expect the people who are that interested in it to have a certain degree of respect as well for the amount of work and art that goes into creating it, and that the release point is the culmination of that. So kind of having a peek in what happens before that, maybe afterwards, maybe once the series is over and you've got the full effect of what the artists in question wanted to achieve. Maybe then it's a nice thing to be able to look and see, oh, well, how did they do that? And what was happening, you know, what adjustments had to be made for them to fulfill their vision. But kind of getting in beforehand shows a kind of lack of respect, I think.
It is.
Yeah.
I don't feel, you know, it's up to them. I'm not trying to judge them particularly as people. I mean, it's their choice.
I think it's an ownership thing, isn't it? There are fans who believe that they own Doctor Who.
And there's fans that will also say, well, you know, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone else. I want to watch it. It's out there. I'm taking that risk. And, you know, who it doesn't hurt anyone. No one's being hurt particularly by this. I'm still going to watch it. I'm still going to buy the DVDs. So, yeah, I can understand that there is a very liberal argument that it doesn't really matter in the end. You know, don't get your knickers in a twist. I suppose for me, it's as I said, I think, on one of the forums, messages we did. It's like a magician, and the magician's going to go out and perform his tricks, and you've happened to find his book behind the stage and you've read it. Then you come out and say, well, look, don't worry, I'm still going to watch you do your tricks. I'm really looking forward to it. But as the magician, you'd probably think, well, it's taken a bit out of it for me, really, because I now know that you know what I'm going to do. Still as good, you've still sort of, it's sort of spot. And I think that's possibly something we don't naturally think about as people, is quite, we don't always empathize to that extent, that hell, you know, it's a bit disappointing for Peter Capaldi or, you know, Stephen Moffat or anyone on the crew's been looking forward to see what people's initial reactions are to seeing the final product, knowing they've seen a half crappy version done for translations. And then
I do agree on the watch it or read it after the fact kind of scenario, mainly because a few years ago when Russell T. Davis released some of his own scripts from the era on his own website, legitimately, not leaked, he just thought, hey, here's some scripts, people might like to read these. As a filmmaker, I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed seeing how the scripts were formatted, because there's a couple different ways, even though there's an industry standard. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed seeing the directions, the way that they were in the script versus the show, and most of them obviously are spot on. But I also like, one of my favorite things to read are books about the making of films. And I do love to watch videos as an extra feature on DVDs about the making of films. So seeing an unfinished episode in some way would be interesting to me, but again, after the fact, because you'd want to have something to contrast it to. And I think if you're contrasting it with, I've watched this unfinished episode, now let me see what the final thing compared to, I think that's the wrong way to go about it. When you see this magic that they've put on screen for you, and after the fact, you can go ahead and see the steps they took to get there, I think that's incredible.
Oh yeah, I agree. I think that's definitely, yeah, that's true.
All right, let's push on then. My recommendation is, well, it's a little late, and I'm not sure if we've already had it last year. I don't know if maybe James watched it, I can't quite recall. But I finally got around to watching Ripper Street.
Oh, good boy.
Yes. So I watched the first episode of Ripper Street on Amazon Prime the evening before last, and I was more thrilled than I expected to be. I expected to like it, but I was very impressed with the whole thing.
They're moving quite far now on the Amazon release for the Series 3.
Are they?
I was just talking to a journalist just an hour or so ago.
Right.
Who had been on set, and he was saying, you know, they're on to about their sort of fifth episode, I think.
Excellent.
So they're moving along. I think it's for a winter, as you say, through Amazon.
Nice. Excellent.
And I think what is just quickly is very interesting is that I think we're going to find how the flexibility of this new medium allows them to be less constricted by time and, you know, slots like you do on television.
Yeah, yeah.
Got that set slot, you've got to fit it into. You know, Doctor Who's famous for it, how much they have to cut out to make that time. So I think it's going to be a very interesting medium to enjoy Ripper Street. So I think it's brilliant, brilliant show. And it's really good to see that production's going on, and it's going to
indeed
do good for them and the BBC. So.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this week's Castorbris podcast with a K, dear listener. Most of all, we would like to thank you for listening. We'd also like to thank Colm Regan for joining us. Thank you, Colm.
You're welcome. Thanks very much for asking me.
And that is probably the last time we'll hear his voice from on high in today's podcast. Thank you to James and Brian, and until next time, it's goodbye.
Has to be my favorite website in the cosmos. Would you like a jelly, baby?